soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
To Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, rebote y el gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Oribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Great opportunity now to catch up to what is a great story. Many people will already know this gentleman. He is Jeff Lunau, now of the Blue Crow Sports Group, who own both Cancun FC in the second division, technically, in Mexico, and Leganés in Spain in the second division as well. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on.
Of course. It's a pleasure to talk to you about what else is going on in football in Houston besides the Dynamo. Dynamo had a great season. Congrats to everybody involved. Obviously didn't achieve the final goal, but getting to the Final Four was pretty amazing.
Yes, tremendous turnaround, and we appreciate that. And I'll ask you about MLS a little bit later in this interview, but let's just start off first with Cancun FC. They're in Liga Expansión, which is the second division. You guys win the title. I mean, this is a monumental moment here, an exciting moment for your group.
It really is. Cancun has only seen one football title, and it was for the team that came from Mexico City called Atlante. They spent a few years in Cancun. They won a championship there, but then they went back to Mexico City. So this is a big milestone for a lot of reasons. Cancun has never had a homegrown team win a championship in any sport. And this is, you know, obviously the king of sports in Mexico is football. And to be able to win a trophy against really tough competition, the team that we beat, funny enough, is the team that had won the championship before Atlanta. And they're a they've got five stars on their logo because they've won five championships. So it was not an easy task. But so Cancun won its first championship for a homegrown team. And Blue Crow Sports Group now has one championship under our belt. We have not only the team in Cancun, we have a team in Spain, and we've got a team in Czech Republic and a team in United Arab Emirates, and probably a few more coming. But the first one is always the sweetest, as it was with the Astros when we won in 2017. And it's a memory that the players and the fans are going to cherish the rest of their lives for sure.
Jeff Lunau joining us of Blue Crow Sports Group. Cancun FC in the first leg, 0-0 with Atlante, ironically, as you mentioned, and then 3-0 in the second leg back in Cancun to win the title. You know, so you mentioned the team in the Czech Republic, the United Arab Emirates, obviously Cancun FC in Mexico, Leganés in Spain, who, by the way, is also in first place for my listeners right now. We'll get into them. But what's the end game here? To come in here, build these teams up, and I would sense get them to the first division, right?
Yes, we're very competitive. We like winning. Obviously, the goal of any division lower than the first division is to get your team promoted and move up. And that's our goal for MFK Viscov in the Czech Republic. That's our goal for Leganés in La Liga. And that's our goal for Cancun FC in Liga de Expansión. Now, in order to do that, you have to win, and the rules have to allow for you to go up. In Leganés, it's pretty straightforward. If we end up first or second this year, we will be in La Liga next year. And right now, our chances are decent because we're in first place, even though there's a long way to go. Same thing, MFK Viscov is in first place at the break. If we continue to win, we will get promoted automatically. Mexico's a little more complicated because they froze relegation and promotion about 5 years ago, right before COVID. And technically, it's open again. However, there's not enough certified teams for a team to go up this year. So even though we just won the title, and even if we win the title in the Clausura tournament, which starts in January, we will at this point, the rules will not allow us to be promoted. But the good news is that for the next cycle starting this summer, we anticipate there's going to be at least four teams, probably more like six or seven, that are going to be certified. And at that point, you know, if you do win, you will get a chance to go up. So that's our goal. Part of why it's important that we won this year is because we have to make some significant investments in infrastructure in order to be certified. And, you know, last few years, we've had a below average team in terms of table placement, and we wanted to demonstrate that we could actually win the league, and we've done that. So now we've got a little bit more confidence in making the investments that we need to make to get the team to the first division.
Jeff, how much is data play into, you know, everybody knows you as somebody who is remarkable with data. Does data apply to soccer to you the same way it did to baseball?
It's different. And I think it's, you know, you don't have a batter pitcher matchup to study where it's one against one. As you know, it's 11 v 11, and every one of those 11 matters relative to the other 11. So it's a much more complicated dynamic happening on the pitch. That being said, I think in the last 10 years, we've seen a lot of advances in terms of developing analytics and using analytics for clubs. And for us, though, the, you know, we are investing in all of that. We've got a technology data analytics group based in London that has people here in Houston and in Dubai and in Madrid. For us, the important thing is using technology to develop players, helping players identify their strengths and weaknesses, helping the coaching staff work with those players to address the weaknesses and to enhance those strengths. And, you know, the biggest difference for me between the world of football and the world of baseball is that you can get to the big leagues at the age of 24, 25 and still have a Hall of Fame career. In the world of football, if you're not with the first team by the time you're 19, you're sort of, you know, that train is, I'm not going to say you can't be a good player. There's a lot of good players that come up after that, but really the elite players all, you know, basically start playing at the top levels at the age of 18, 19, which means if you have a 16-year-old prospect in your system, you have to develop that athlete in 24 months or 36 months. Otherwise they're going to lose that opportunity to be one of the truly elite players. And so how we use technology and coaching and all the things to develop the young players, that's really going to be, I think, Blue Crow's calling card and where we think we're going to differentiate ourselves.
So the data is important in it, but you also have to have the staff that can implement, yes, that are good teachers, that can hone down on, you know, maybe it's a guy's a good dribbler, but he's not a penetrator. Yeah. So how to get behind, you know, somebody who's marking him one-on-one. So you have to have the staff. How did you find your staff in Mexico?
So we currently have a Mexican coach who's elite. I think he's the youngest coach in the entire Mexican football pyramid, and we think he's got tremendous potential. This is the third coach we've had since we acquired the team, and I think there's a certain profile. We've been adjusting what we're looking for, and we've also been evaluating a lot of different candidates, and I think we finally landed on the right spot, which is clearly experience, you know, playing and coaching the game is important, but also an open-mindedness to the fact that there may be some other information out there and players that come from outside the country that could help. And I think we landed on exactly the right profile with Luis Arce in Mexico, but he gets a lot of support. His staff is really good, and we support him from Houston. We support him from our office in London, and we help him define and refine his playing model, because everything starts with the playing model. And, you know, clubs have playing models that they find a coach to accommodate. And then there's other clubs that bring in a coach, and whatever playing model he has, they're going to have to live with. We're sort of a hybrid. We have some philosophies of our organization, but we understand that Mexico is a very unique market. Cancun's a unique market. The coach is going to have his own point of view. So we kind of have a mixed model. But once we define the model, then we organize the entire recruitment and development structure to fine tune the players so that they fit that model. And that's kind of been where we use a lot of the technology and data and analytics to help define exactly what our center back needs to do, exactly what our left winger needs to do, and then to go out and recruit for those and also to develop those in our own system.
So it's a blend of both. It's a blend, yes, of having your structure in place and then finding players that will adapt to it right away and then teaching others to then be a part of the game model. Okay, so I was very interested. You found a guy named Asami Traore, who's a very young guy from Burkina Faso. Tell me the story about him. How you found him?
So we have a partnership with a group that has been recruiting and finding good young players in Africa for over a decade. And that partnership has led to us bringing players to Cancun. We've had five or six players from Africa come to Cancun. And I got to tell you, the first couple of players that arrived, The response from the folks locally was, you know, African players in Mexico, the transition is too hard. They have, there's not a really good track record. They don't play tactically the same way that Mexicans do. It's going to be really difficult. Yes, they have athleticism, but they're never going to learn the game to be able to compete in the Mexican pyramid. And that, I think we've proven that narrative to be false. Traore came to us a year ago. He was a sub last year. He became a starter last tournament. And then this tournament, he's basically started every single match. And, you know, we basically brought him back from winger to left back. He's got offensive capabilities, but we figured that a player like him, left backs are so hard to find in the MLS and Liga MX and in Europe. We figured a player like him, if we can take that athleticism and teach him the parts of that position that are important, he could become very valuable. And, you know, he didn't have a goal scored for us all season, and he scored the two most important goals of our entire year to win the championship. And he was so happy. I was with him after the match, and he couldn't be more happy. And I think he's created value for himself. He's created value for our team. At one point towards the end of the match, we had three of our African players on the pitch at the same time. So I think we've disrupted a little bit the model that, you know, the only foreigners that can succeed in Mexico are from South America. I think we've proven that foreigners coming from completely different places. I mean, they've all three learned English. They've adapted. They've worked really hard. They've done a lot of their job. But that's a big part of recruiting, is making sure not only do you get the athleticism, but you get the ability to learn and to adapt and to take on new challenges. And I think that's something we've done well with these young men.
He's Jeff Luno, Blue Crow Sports Group here. Amazing story with Cancun FC winning the title. Leganés in the Spanish second division currently is number one, looking for a straightforward jump into La Liga. That would be something spectacular. Just to kind of get back to your coach, Luis Arce, he's 32 years of age. You know, when you win like this, as you know better than anybody, yeah, everybody comes for your assets.
Yeah.
All right? They covet your assets. Are you getting people inquiring about your coach, your players?
We know it's going to happen, but Luis, the way we structure his contracts is if he has success, he's going to, you know, we're going to commit longer to him and he's going to commit longer to us. Obviously, there's, you know, if he gets an opportunity to go coach in the first division somewhere, we're not going to prevent him from doing that because we want to be known. I mean, one of the things, I visited Red Bull Salzburg a few years back, and it was great to see that they have this attitude that coaches also want to go there because they know they're going to go straight from there to the Bundesliga or to the Premier League, et cetera, and they've had a track record of that. I'd love to be known as an organization that develops coaches as well as players. That being said, I really like Luis Arce to stick around and help us get promoted to Liga MX. So he's terrific. You know, he was in Bolivia when we found him, but we knew him. He worked in the youth system for Puebla, which Jonathan Himmelfarb, our sporting director, also worked there. His cousin was a head coach in the Mexican league. And he is just such a smart, hardworking guy that communicates well with everybody. And he wants to be a winner. And that's, you know, he's already got one under his belt. And hopefully there'll be more to come.
All right. That's part one with Jeff Lunau, the former general manager of the Houston Astros, now heading up Blue Crow Sports Management. Part two right around the corner. Before we get there, though, quick word here for Lamont Brands. LamontBrands.com. You get the Soccer Matters T-shirts over there. What you can do with that is, well, you'll know that you are getting a T-shirt with meaning, because all the proceeds go to a 501c charity, the Snowdrop Foundation. You also get trucker hats, T-shirts, hats, Soccer Matters, Lamont Brands, Fighting Cancer, Snowdrop Foundation. What could be better? LamontBrands.com. Christmas presents. We'll take a break.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Gakpo shoots! Nunez keeps it alive! The strike is there!
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Look, John and his firm get us on the air, and they get us interviews like this with Jeff Lunau of Blue Crow Sports Management. So you can't thank John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm enough for being our presenting sponsor. 713-CALL now. More importantly, if you want the best in personal injury attorney, it's the Daspit Law Firm. Again, DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL now. Fender bender, any kind of car accident, drive an 18-wheeler, work in a refinery, maritime accident, whatever it is, and you need a personal injury attorney, there's only one. There's only one that's the best. DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL now. Part two now, Jeff Lunau, Blue Crow Sports Management. All right, so I moved this forward here. Baseball, do you miss it?
I do, and fortunately, you know, a couple of our my partners, my co-investors are from the world of baseball, both former investors in or current investors in other clubs, as well as some players. I watch, you know, I've watched the Astros every year since I left. I still live in town. I'm still right here next to it. And I do miss it. But the reality is, to me, the world of football is where I'm meant to be right now. It's so fascinating. And the fact that I got to lift a trophy in baseball and just a few days ago lift a trophy in football, you know, to me, that means everything, because I'm a novice. I'm an outsider in sports, always have been. But I think there's things that I bring to the table that maybe don't exist as much in some of these sports. And the fact that I've been able to demonstrate that maybe a slightly unique or different way of doing things can lead to positive results, you know, gives every person with an engineering degree or every management consultant who studied economics the dream of someday being able to lift a trophy on a stage together with a team.
Yeah, it's remarkable stuff. And we're talking to Jeff Lunau, Blue Crow Sports Group. Is that, I read some articles where you said, well, I'm not the biggest knowledgeable guy about global football. Yet isn't that part of the allure, I think, is to get that opinion that's outside the box? And obviously, you're so refined in, you know, data and analytics and all these things, you're obviously proven. But is the outside perspective something you seek out? And how much of that do you take? And how much of it is the naked eye? And, you know, all those things, the traditional soccer guy with the outsider kind of.
Well, it's a good question. I think for me, my area of expertise, I'm not a scout. You know, I was never a scout in baseball, and I'm not a scout in football. There are a lot of people better than me that looking at a game and telling me who the best player is and why. That being said, what I am an expert at is making decisions. And decisions are so important in the sports world, and the risk of making the wrong decision can sink a franchise. And that's what I became really good at in my 16 years in baseball, is helping my clubs make the best decisions. Now, how do you make the best decisions? You need to have all the information that's going to help you make the decisions. You're going to have the perspective of the scout. You're going to have the perspective of the coach, the trainer, the psychologist, the data analytics person, all of the people that have a point of view. You need to be able to bring all that information together, have it there and ready for you when you need to make the decision. And, you know, in these transfer windows last August, September 1st, you know, we had to make a decision in the last half hour of the window, a major decision, whether to bring Miguel de la Fuente to Leganés or not. And it was going to be a costly decision if it was wrong. Now, he's now leading our team in goals, and he's one of the reasons we're in first place. January is the same thing. You know, you have to have the information, but you have to have it available to you at a time when you can make the decisions. And then you need to figure out how to balance, how much do I weigh the sporting opinion versus the psychologist versus the doctor's opinion versus the coach's desire, all of that. And I think that's where I have 20 years experience in the world of sports, helping my organizations make decisions. And the reality is, all I have to do is be a little better than average to create some real value for the organization, because no matter what, just like, you know, in sports executing, there's going to be times when you succeed, times when you fail on every game. In the world of making decisions in sports, your failure rate is exceptionally high. So high that if you did it in business, you'd be out of business. But in the world of sports, if you're just right 52% of the time and the other guys are right 48% of the time, you're going to win championships that way. And that's our philosophy.
Fascinating. He's Jeff Lunau, Blue Crow Sports Group. Okay. So going back to, you know, making decisions. is it as simple as, okay, we're going to get input from eight people and majority rules? Or are there times you don't go with the majority rules because of gut instinct? I mean, that to me is what's fascinating, because a lot of times people can play it off. Well, it's collaborative. It's a group. You said it. I make decisions. But how does that, you know, how does that work in your mind? Is it a majority rules when you get all this input?
No, it's not majority rules. But what I do like to have in general is some construct beforehand about how we're going to make the decision. How much is the scouting opinion going to weigh into it? How much is the medical opinion a red flag, or is it a go, no go decision? You know, how much do the economics play into it? The risk assessment that our financial analyst has. You know, a lot of times these contracts look really good in the first year, but by the third, fourth year, they're sinking the franchise. So all of that has to come into play. You know, at the end of the day, we try and develop some sort of decision-making model where beforehand, just to keep ourselves accountable, because it's hard not to let emotion take over in the final moments when the press is screaming. I mean, the last transfer window, I had fans, it was midnight. I had fans off the balcony of my office screaming up there saying, you know, we want a player, we want to, and you tend to want to respond as a human being to these things, but you have to be disciplined and you have to do what's right for the organization. So that being said, every decision at the end of the day has some sense of that sort of, what do I feel is the right thing to do? I can't really explain it using numbers, but I feel like this is the right thing to do. You know, I felt that way when we traded for Justin Verlander back in 2017. And even though the economic model said it's not a value creating move, you know, I knew at that point that the first championship for the Astros was, you know, you couldn't measure the impact of that, and bringing a pitcher in like him was going to help us win that championship. So I kind of ignored the rational part and went for the emotional part. I think there comes times when you have to do that. But if you make a habit of making emotional decisions, you end up over investing in players or systems that aren't going to really give you the return that you want. And that's a big problem.
Fascinating stuff here. Jeff, as far as picking a manager, I mean, it's not like picking a player, right? I mean, you can't go see if he's explosive over 2 yards, or, you know, if he penetrates down the right side, or, you know, if his data shows him getting into the final third. So does data play any singular part in picking a baseball manager or a soccer manager?
Well, I think there's different, the world of soccer, I've realized it's a totally different ballgame in terms of the leader on the pitch, because the pressure when the team loses, now this is true in all sports, but when the team loses, it's the manager's fault. And when the team wins, you know, maybe the manager gets credit, probably, but you're going to lose, and the pressure is going to be there to make a change. And there's really, from the fans and the media perspective, it's the only lever you have to change a team's fortunes is to swap out the manager. You know, in baseball, I was fortunate to hire a guy like AJ Hinch. And through the good times and the bad times, I could stick with him because I knew that he was doing things the right way. In football, it's much, much harder. I had to let go both my managers of Cancun and Leganés last year, not because I didn't, you know, think they were doing a good job, but really, there was no other choice at that point based on the results of the team. That being said, you know, we look at decisions they've made in the past. We look at, you know, how their game model is, all of that. But we have a very thorough process of selecting our managers. And to give you an example, Borja Jimenez, who's also one of the up and coming young managers in Spain, I spoke to 5 players that were on his teams in the last few years. I spoke to both of the presidents that he worked for. I spoke to, you know, agents that knew him. I spoke to just about everybody I could to really develop a complete profile of who this person is. And he interviewed not just with me and our sporting director, but with 5 other people in our organization. And he went up against 4 other candidates. And he was not the first choice for all of the interviewers. I will say he was my first choice from the beginning. And at the end of the day, he became the consensus first choice, and it's been a no-brainer so far. And I think with both him and Luis, we're lucky. We have young coaches who are going to have huge careers in front of them, but they're helping our teams be successful right now, which is the most important thing.
Interesting. Data. Are you worried that we're getting overdated in the world of sports? Could there be a worry with that, you think?
Because
It seems to me everybody's got to validate their position in an organization. And
yeah,
I mean, I can only imagine how much data flows to people.
Yeah, there's a lot of data. And the thing about data, it's kind of like a politician with facts. You can find facts to support whatever position you want, whether you're, you know, for or against global warming. You can find plenty of facts to support your point of view. And to a certain extent in sports, you have the same thing. You can always sort of massage the information to help you support a decision that you've made. Apologize, there's an ambulance going by behind here. But, you know, for me, it's having done it now for 20 years, there is a role for data. It's important, but you also have to truly understand the limitations of the data, because the data, you know, it doesn't know the personality. It doesn't know the drive of the human being. It doesn't know the dynamics of how people react when there's adversity and all of that. And there's different ways to get at that stuff, but the best way is to actually get to know the player or the coach. And that's, you know, observing them firsthand and getting to know them firsthand.
Yeah. It's like the last game of the Dynamo were in 70% of the possession, but it doesn't quantify what happened. And it's up to people that are commentators to explain why exactly that 70% possession was in their own half of the field or in the middle third. So it is interesting. And, but you know, you now have coaches even quoting expected goals and everything. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think that's okay. I mean, I want my coaches to know what the data means and when it's useful. You know, for me, the worst outcome is that a coach makes a decision and there was data available to help him make a better decision, but he didn't either know it or want it, or it wasn't provided to him. I think that's the worst outcome. I trust everybody that works for me to make their own decisions as long as they have all the information they need or whatever we can provide them. And so our coaches know I will never tell them they have to play a certain player or play a certain game model. But I do want to know what their thought process was both before and after. Why did you make that change in the 60th minute? You know, just so that, I mean, that's what I used to do with AJ Hinch of baseball. Why did you make that pitching change? Not as an accusatory, you know, but I just wanted to understand how he thinks. And he would always tell me, well, you know, the guy's pinky was bothering him. There are always the right reasons, but it's good to have that dialogue. So I think that really applies in this case as well.
Excellent. Two quick ones, and then we're going to finish it. This is exceptional. Sure. Jeff, really enjoying this. I think we could go on forever here because it's a fascinating discussion. All right. As far as data, though, can't that be used sometimes as a fallback position for lacking success?
Yeah. I mean, I think there are.
I mean, by coaches.
I do think so. I mean, you know, a big part of being a coach is explaining what happened in the game after a loss. And, you know, if you, you know, sometimes I think you can say, look, I made these decisions for this reason and it didn't work out, because no matter what part sport you're in, luck plays a huge part in it, and you can make all the right decisions and still not be successful. But, you know, I think if you rely only on information provided to you by the front office to make decisions and you're following it sort of like by script, then, you know, that could be a huge problem, I think.
Last one. I think I know that you had an inkling or an interest in MLS potentially and investing in Major League Soccer. Thoughts on that. And
yeah, I mean, I'm very bullish about MLS. I think with the, you know, all the investment that's been made, there's a lot of really good owners in the MLS. You know, we looked at the possibility of doing something in MLS a few years back when we were just getting into this. To us at the time, the valuations were too high relative to other buying opportunities in Europe and other parts of Mexico and other places. That being said, you know, there continues to be interest in the MLS from the ownership and investment standpoint. And, you know, I think that there are some teams that are profitable, some teams that are not, like in most leagues. With the World Cup coming here, it's a golden opportunity to take soccer, you know, and establish it as one of the primary American sports. Having said that, I was living in the U.S. in 94 when we had the same opportunity back then, and it didn't really happen the way we thought it was. So I think MLS needs to be able to support itself irrespective of what's going on elsewhere. It's the only league in the world with a closed system. I think it's much harder for a closed system to be successful long term because, you know, come the end of the season, the teams in last place aren't playing for anything. Come the end of a season in Spain, The last week of May and the first week of June is the most exciting week on the calendar in the Premier League, in Spain, in Italy, in France, in Germany, all over Europe, because every team is playing something. If you're not playing for promotion or a spot in Europe, you're playing to avoid relegation or you're playing for extra TV money. And every goal, every moment is super important. And it changes how the next generation engages with the sport, where it's really like the most important thing in their lives during that time. And I mean, obviously MLS has great teams and a lot of passion, but that's a handicap relative to other leagues that I think over long term has to be handled.
Yeah. I think people recognize the lack of consequence. So you coming from baseball and playoffs, I'm getting the sense here, you're a promotion and relegation guy now.
I am all in on promotion and relegation. I think until you've lived through it and you've seen it firsthand, you realize the value that it truly creates. I mean, first of all, you know, every town has a chance to dream of being in first division. It doesn't matter if you're Luton Town or who you are, you can dream that your team's going to be in first division. And those dreams keep interest, keep hope alive, and keep the whole system going. So I love it. I'm a huge fan of it. And I wish it would happen in the States. I know it's not really practical given the amount of money people spend for those franchises, but in Mexico, it absolutely needs to happen. I think Mexico, if they copy the closed system, is going to have some real challenges.
Well, Jeff, this has been very enlightening. Thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun talking to you. And I think after this interview, there's a few more Cancun FC and Leganés fans now in Spain. So listen, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And you answered the call very quickly. So from me to you, I say thank you very much for being a part of this.
Okay. Thanks for having me on, Glenn.
All right. It's the one and only Jeff Lunau, Blue Crow Sports Group. We'll take a break. More to come here on Soccer Matters. Call it what you like. It's time you got to wear.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis. The Daspit.
All right, final segment of the show tonight here is always brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they'll handle your case. They'll work for you 24-7, nights and weekends. So if you get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident, it's John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. He is the former coach of the Houston Dash, took over Gotham FC this year, led them to the NWSL title with a 2-1 win over OL Reign. He's Juan Carlos Amoros. He joins us now. Juan, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Glenn.
Well, we wanted to recap what was a pretty remarkable season. What a turnaround for Gotham FC. And I know it's a season, like most clubs, of ups and downs and then timing things right. Just kind of take us into the year in your words.
Well, definitely a very interesting ride, no? Taking the challenge of moving the team that was bottom. At the beginning, it was to change the culture, to change the style. I brought the staff, we brought players, but it was mainly how to change the club from the inside, and step by step, and with a lot of work, we started doing that from pre-season. Season started really well for us. There was, as you said, a lot of ups, a lot of downs, but in this league, it's so competitive. You just need to make it to the playoffs. We did really well in the cup as well. And once we got to the playoffs, even if we didn't finish the season with the results we wanted, with the games we were playing at really high level, and we knew we had the toughest run going away to North Carolina. If we win that one, we won that one, and we went to Portland, which was the champions in the home turf in front of 25,000 people. We also won that one, and in the final, I think the team again showed the commitment, the ability, the belief in a game plan, in a style. And I'm very happy because it's obviously come up with the championship, but already we were recognized for our style and our football. So the fact that we were able to change from bottom to top is amazing. No, it's a dream come true.
Juan Carlos Amoros joining us. You heard him just say they beat North Carolina, Portland on the road, and then OL Reign in the final. Juan was a former coach at Real Betis, Tottenham Hotspur. So when you get into this environment, Are there even some of the veteran players that need sort of a reboot and a refocus and need to be challenged in different ways? Because when you're a last place team, it's easy to kind of go down the Crimea River kind of thing. Did you have to challenge even some of the veterans here?
Well, I think the veterans here was one of the best surprises I had. No, obviously in the team we already had Ali Krieger, Ali Long, Michel Betos, and they were really, really committed to the cause from day one. They really understood what was required and what we needed, and they really bought in from the beginning. Then obviously we signed people like Kelly O'Hara and like Kristen Edmonds. In the team, we also have McCall Cervoni. You know, we're talking about 7-8 players over 35-year-olds. That's always a challenge as a coach, no? Because they got all the experience that they've won, they've done everything. So, but I can only speak so highly of every single one of them. Obviously, Ali Krieger is probably the top of them, because she was the captain of the team and the captain of the club, and she was amazing. But the rest of them, from day one, we showed them what we wanted to do, and I think that got them involved from the start. They were really committed to winning and to do it in a clear structure and in a clear way. And for me, at the beginning, I thought it could be a challenge, and with time, I realized that they were the engine of what we did. So it's been incredible to work with every single one of them. And Ali's retirement and the way she did this year, it was something to probably write a book about.
Juan Carlos Amoros joining us, coach of Gotham FC, the NWSL champions. Did you get challenged by Lynn Williams or Ali Krieger, somebody? I mean, how much challenge did they give the coach? Because I know that's something you're not afraid of and you're not afraid to be involved with, because it can lead to better things, right?
Absolutely. I think we created an environment where obviously Lynn is a person that is always trying to be better, and she's always having questions to make sure that she understands what is required from her and what is required to win and what is required for her to be better. So we have a very, very healthy relation there. But I think we created an environment where we obviously challenge the players, but the players challenge us. And when we say challenge, sometimes people might be afraid of. And I think challenge is a question, is how can they be better, how they need to do better with their teammate, with the unit, with the team. And I think that's what creates a better team and a better individual, no? The fact that we create an environment where people can speak, where people can express themselves and show what they fear and show what they doubt, and at the same time what they believe, and we have to point them in the right direction and make them understand the whys we're asking them to do certain things. And once we are all in that same road, in that same direction, I think the players can highlight their individual qualities and their individual attributes. And that's what we've been able to do. Obviously, you know, Ling was our top goal scorer and she was on the best 11 in the league. The same with Ali Krieger, but we got Jenna, Rookie of the Year, and now going into the national team, no? And we got like Mitch Purse coming back to, we could say, coming back to life and being an MVP after a difficult season with injuries. You know, like every single player that we have in the roster this year, I think it's a stepped up. Delaney Sheehan, Neely Martin, you know, players that, Ellie Jean, players that have played key roles for the team that maybe weren't in the, you know, in, I wouldn't say in the bed, so how do you say in America, but like maybe some of the biggest names, if you want to call it. But for us, it's not about the names, it's about the players, it's about the human. And they've all challenged ourselves, and they challenged themselves to be better. And that's what got us the championship, no?
Juan, when did you feel it changing? Because, you know, you obviously had momentum going into the playoffs. You got the last playoff spot, right? And there is something uplifting about grabbing that last playoff spot and saying, hey, we're here now. We got a shot at doing something special. But where did you really feel it began to turn? Was there a specific stage or game?
Well, I think that the moment where I think it came up in the video that we spoke, that we put together as a club, I think on August 19th, there was a very important game for us. I think we went to San Diego. We played really well. I think we should have scored goals. We didn't. We were 2-0 down. It was the 90th minute, but we had 3 injuries already in that game. And in the 90-something minute, the keeper Abby got injured. Neely Martin had to go and go. And the team kept pushing with 10 players we put San Diego against the ropes. We score a goal, I think it was in the 100th minute, and the players wanted to win. And that's that day I told them that that's the day I knew that we could go. We could go to the playoffs, we could go to the championship. So we actually recap on that moment the day before the final in the match day minus one. And we spoke about Neely going in goal and how the team, even with 10 players, showed that character on that day. We showed them some pictures there on the pitch. And I couldn't believe it when in the final in the minute 95, the keeper gets sent off and Neely Martin needs to go in goal again. And we actually win the championship. I still get goosebumps on my arms when I think about this. No, and in the minute, you know, and we won the championship with 10 players in San Diego with Neely Martin in the same goal that he was on that August 19th. So I think it was a full circle of the season, a full cycle of a very special story. So for me, that day is the day. Sometimes football is not fair. Sometimes you work really hard, you don't get a result. Sometimes you were not good and you get a result, but sometimes it's the feelings that you have as a coach. And I always felt that this group was special, but probably it was on that August 19th that I know, you know what, this team has something in them that might take them all the way to the championship, no?
Juan Carlos Amoros joining us. What a story that is. NWSL champions. Now, if you look at what's going on in Europe, and let's be completely upfront here, Barcelona, Manchester City, it's a bigger brand than the NWSL. I get the sense there are going to be players competitively now that in a bigger way, if it's already happening, that are going to want to go to play to Europe for a variety of reasons. Maybe because they feel they can expand their game differently based on the way the game's played over there. How big of a challenge is now the global perspective on the NWSL, and maybe what does the NWSL have to do to remain competitive? Because I know over here we quickly say, well, it's the best league in the world. That could be true. It doesn't mean you're not being challenged.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we can't compete is with the history that those clubs have behind them. That's a fact. We can't create 100 years of history in 3 years, no? But what is better in America is the player experience, is the fan experience, is the competitiveness of the league, is the standards that everything around the league has compared to the local leagues in Europe. No? Yeah, the Champions League is good, but sometimes even in these group of stages, you can see little stadiums that are not full. Here we got regular season games with 20,000 people on a weekly basis. And I said this to the European players that we signed. Here, listen, be ready, because here is every week is a Champions League semi-final in front of thousands and thousands of people, and that's the standard. And that day-to-day competition, I think players like Esther or Maitane are starting to feel it and to see it. And I really hope, and I think that if things keep going in the same way, there's going to be probably more players coming over this way than players probably going, American players going the opposite way. No, I think it's important that if we want to be the best league in the world, we have to have the best players. Those best players, some of them are from the US, some of them are international. We already have a lot of international talent here, and I think it's going to grow, but we can't relax. No, the league needs to push, the clubs need to push. Now with the salary cap increase, there is little things there that are going to help. I think the commitment from every club in this league to make it the best in the world, I think is a fair challenge and a fair, we have a fair shot to it. Maybe to make it, the challenge is now to make it more known internationally, this league, looking maybe at that, changing some of the time of the games because they're very late in Europe or something like that could help. But we will see. No, I think that the league is definitely on the rise.
Juan Carlos Amoros joining us. So, do you think players from the perspective of their individual careers might, I'm going to go play in a Barcelona or in the Premier League because I might be challenged or asked to do some things tactically differently, which could expand my game and make me a better player. Do you see any players kind of thinking like that?
It could be. No, it's difficult because every club have different approaches. That's exactly what we're trying to do here at Gotham. No, we're trying to be different in here. My assistant head coach, Jesus, does a really good job, no, helping with all the shaping of the tactical side of things with our own methodology, what we call the organized chaos and the tactical order to create something special here that brings the attention not only from the fans or from the people around the game, but also from the players to feel like, well, you know what, Gotham does something different. I want to be there. You know, I want to I want to be part of that. I think we've shown that this year, players' development, style of play, and I think that really helped, and that really is creating something where people is looking from the outside. We always talk with the players about we open the window on game day and we let people see what we do every day at training, because that's how it is. And I think step by step we've achieved that. We obviously got a lot of recognition, the championship in the end, which is unbelievable. But we want to keep going. No, we want to make sure that we are not done yet. That's one of the sentences that we use a lot, and we want to keep growing.
He's Juan Carlos Amoros, and what a year it was for Gotham FC, the NWSL champions. They got goals from Lynn Williams, Esther Gonzalez Rodriguez, 2 assists from Mitch Purse. They plowed through North Carolina, Portland, and OL Reign was the team they defeated in the final. It's a remarkable run. All right, you're in my home state of New Jersey now, and I know you were here in Houston. It was pretty hot here, as you know. All right, so what do you think of the great state, the Garden State of New Jersey, Juan? Living there, playing there, coaching there, all those things.
Listen, I think I've lived in America actually in 3 states already. I lived in California some years ago. I lived in Houston. I live in New Jersey. I think one thing that is always for me important is the people. I think the people in this country is special, and in New Jersey they are too. I think here I got a little baby, so he loves the countryside, going to the farms. It's a very enjoyable little towns around where we live, and we also have the big city of New York around the corner. So it's a very, very nice place to live. So it was Houston, a part of my heart. I always say it's there because it was my home, our home as a family. And we are happy. We're happy in New Jersey, but it's a great country. You know, America is a country that welcomes people with open arms and with a lot of different cultures that make it one of the best countries in the world to live. So I'm very happy that we've been able to build a family, to grow a family here, you know, in New Jersey at the moment.
Well, I think the NWSL has a huge asset in you, because I know on the other side of it how badly you want to help grow the women's game and continue to push it forward in whatever market you're in. I got that sense when you were here in Houston. The last one before I let you go, you know, is there an area of the NWSL? Let's say I made you the commissioner, Juan. What would be the first thing that maybe you would do? You can't say expand the salary cap, but you know, what would be, you know, something really important, I think, in your mind right now that the league might want to adopt or accelerate?
I think maybe finding ways to make the global vision of the league, not that the rest of the world find ways to get the rest of the globe or the world to look at this league, because it's very special. There is a lot of talent. Yeah, we can bring more talent, but you need to find ways to make it visible. No visibility in the game. I like to call it in the game more than in the women's game, because that's when I think equality will be 100% there. But I think finding ways to make it reachable for every person in the planet, and that will be something that I would say will be the focus, because that's when everyone will know how good this league is.
Juan, listen, thank you very much. I know you're flying out to Spain. Have a great trip back to your country, and thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on the NWSL title and being named the Coach of the Year.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Always a pleasure, and looking forward to see family and friends back home after a very, very unbelievable year here in New Jersey. You know?
Likewise. Have great holidays, Juan. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you, Glenn.
All right, that wraps it up here tonight for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by DaspitLaw.com. 713-CALL-NOW. There are presenting sponsors. Download the podcast, Spotify, Apple, Google. You can go to ESPN975.com as well. Plus, don't forget to get over to our Soccer Matters channel on YouTube. And until next week, remember, I'm Glenn Davis, and Soccer Matters.